The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Derek Dorch of the Diversa Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and careers. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dorch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for stopping by the show, and thank you for coming by in this new year. A lot has been going on. We've had the inauguration. We've had a number of different things happen in terms of executive orders, and we've got some anxiety that we're having right now in terms of federal employees. The President Trump has now signed executive orders to do a hiring freeze and also executive orders to do a number of different things that really have implications for federal workers. Today, we're going to be talking about this and much more, and we're going to be talking about this with one of the unions who represents federal employees and really kind of looks out for their interests, the American Federation of Government Employees. We're talking to their national president, David Cox Sr. And sir, David, welcome to being on the show, sir.
Thank you so much, Derek. Glad to be with you.
You know, talk to us, sir, about what's going on right now. I mean, what are you hearing from your constituents? And even before I kind of go into that, tell us about your organization, but what are you hearing about from your constituents as well about what's going on with the new administration and some of these executive orders?
Well, sure. First off, AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees, we're the largest federal employee union in the country, represent approximately 700,000 federal employees all over the country in virtually every zip code, VA, Social Security, Border Patrol, Department of Defense, TSA, the Smithsonian, the list goes on and on and on, Department of Labor, of all the people that we represent. But certainly, the hiring freeze is of a real concern to all of our membership. Number one, many of our agencies have been understaffed. The government has been in a sequestration mode for several years, which they've been operating on less resources. Many of them have already had a limited hiring or partial hiring freezes. So a nationwide hiring freeze will prove detrimental to the American public. It will slow down Social Security claims, slow down the processing of veterans' disability claims, have inadequate staffing at VA medical centers, slow down the screening lines at airports, and harm our national defense. So that's a real concern that we have at this point.
You know, there was a mention about with the new administration really kind of focused in on attrition. Is there some concern amongst federal workers about how the president and his administration may handle federal workers and maybe trying to move certain people out or really try to kind of push the whole attrition thing, maybe try to get people out earlier or not? I mean, what's the sense that you're getting right now?
Well, when you read the memorandum that the president did earlier this week, it talked about a 90-day hiring freeze or until. Mm-hmm. So the freeze could be longer than 90 days until the OMB director and OPM director come up with a plan to reduce the size of the federal workforce. The federal workforce has been flatlined right around 2 million employees for 50 years. It was that number when John Kennedy was president, when I was a very, very young child, to today at the finish of the Obama presidency. However, we saw in the 80s with President Reagan, the shadow government workforce, the contract and service contract workforce increased dramatically, and today there is about 5 million people that are in the contract government workforce, the shadow workforce. And we believe very seriously that's where the president, if he wants to drain the swamp, could certainly start with that contract workforce. There's about $320 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars, spent on service contracts each year by the federal government. And there's a lot of opportunity for fraud, waste, and abuse in those type contracts.
You know, when we look at this and looking at the number of initiatives, I mean, everything from kind of the building the wall to increasing, you know, a military to in building the Navy, it seems as if all the initiatives that the president is talking about really does require federal workers and requires federal oversight. So I guess people are probably confused in terms of a certain initiatives being pushed forward and then the drawdown of the federal worker. Is that what you're also sensing as well, sir?
Certainly. I mean, part of it, it's a little difficult to understand. If we're going to increase the size of our military, we are going to have a larger civilian workforce to support that military, because we need people, the civilian workforce, on the Department of Defense military bases. I would also point out that a hiring freeze harms veterans, and particularly disabled veterans. The government is the largest employer of veterans. Over 31% of all federal employees are veterans. And so at this point, it's harming those folks for good middle-class jobs. And something that someone said to me earlier, most federal employees, and 85% of them are out of the Washington, D.C. area, their average wage is about $50,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
When they have that job in middle America or from my home state of North Carolina at Fort Bragg or at the Salisbury VA Medical Center, they receive that paycheck. They go spend that entire paycheck in that local community.
Right.
So those dollars turn over four or five or more times. So there'll be an impact to local economies as we don't replace federal employees.
You know, President Cox, so I've been hearing from a lot of different people who were interested, young people who've been interested in the federal government and others who were interested in possibly, you know, coming aboard and becoming a federal worker at some time and working in the public sector. But they're very, very concerned right now that, you know, there won't be a federal job for them. Is this going to kind of taint the government when, you know, we're talking about a different kind of economy where, you know, people may move away from the public sector and we need our best and brightest to come into the public sector? Is this going to kind of taint the image of the federal government to recruit that talent?
Clearly, I believe that it will be harmful. We are the end of January. Most people are finishing up colleges along the end of April, 1st of May. They're currently applying for jobs, seeking employment. Now is the time that many government agencies are trying to recruit the best and the brightest, get people that want to be civil servants. I'm a registered nurse by profession. I wanted to work at the VA. I wanted to care for veterans. So if we're in a time of freezing, people are not going to be looking to civil service. So it will be harmful to the government for years to come. We may not see the immediate effect within a week or two, but there will be long-term effects. And I was very pleased that Dr. Shulkin, who's the nominee to be the VA secretary, spoke out yesterday saying that a hiring freeze would certainly be harmful to the VA nationwide, and that he certainly needs to hire more people at the VA. So I'm glad that one of the president's cabinet nominees, and AFG certainly supports the nomination and hopes is working hard for the confirmation of Dr. Shulkin to be the VA secretary, is speaking out saying, wait a minute, I need federal workers to care for these veterans. And I hope that other cabinet appointees that are moving into their agencies are going to say, I need people to take care of the government services and to provide those services for the American people. That's what the civil service is all about.
Sir, what would you say the morale right now of the federal worker is? I mean, you know, they've been taking a beating for this past election. What would you say the morale is?
I think the morale is low,
mm-hmm.
And I think it's been consistently low for several years. Federal employees have went through 3 years of pay freezes, 2 years with a 1% across the board raise. They've seen retirement costs increased on new hires. People want to beat up on them continuously. And they are, federal employees are the nurse and assistant right now at the bedside, holding a veteran's hand or bathing a veteran that is taking their last breath that served this country so honorably. A federal employee is a Border Patrol agent that is protecting my grandchildren from drugs coming into this country. They're a correctional officer working in a federal prison somewhere, protecting us from those that have harmed society, and they're people that's inspecting the food, making sure that air travel is safe. So the list goes on and on of what we're doing every day to care for the American people.
Well, to take a quick break, we're talking to David Cox. He is the national president of the American Federation for Government Employees. They have about 700,000 federal workers that they represent, everybody from the VA all the way down to people in Homeland Security with Customs and Border Protection. They're representing the interests of a lot of different federal workers, so they do have the pulse of the federal worker out there. And we're trying to find out how they're going to take on some of these issues. What's their thoughts? What's the federal worker thoughts about the new administration and some of the executive orders and some of the things that are happening right now with the federal government? We'll be right back after this break. We'll keep this conversation going. Listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about the federal government, talking about some of the executive orders that have been coming out of the Trump administration, a new executive order that just came out about a hiring freeze on federal workers and how it's impacting, and then also other executive orders that really do impact the federal worker, and also conversations about the VA and a number of different things right now. We're talking to the national president of the American Federation for Government Employees, AFGE. You can find their website at afge.org. And we're talking to David Cox. He has been with the federal government, working with the VA, has been a nurse at the bedside of veterans and really kind of being in that public sector. And then he came on to do this work right here to represent federal employees. And so we're getting a pulse of what's happening right now. You know, President Cox, you know, when we think about this kind of stuff right here, and we think about the unions working with the new administration, how do you go about, you know, as you and a couple other unions that represent the federal employees, how do you guys go about really talking to the new administration and representing the interests? And have you heard from anybody from the new administration to say, what are you guys thinking about and where do we come to the table to kind of come to the agreement on some things?
Well, I've written President Trump a letter requesting a meeting with him, talking about the great services that our membership provides for the American people. He did send a copy of the letter back to me with just a short note. He didn't say that he would set up a meeting, but I have responded back that I would like to have a meeting with him, and I would publicly, and I am going to invite over and over President Trump to go with me to visit a VA medical center, to visit a military base, to visit any federal facility, to see the great work that federal employees, his employees, do for the American people. He's been very emphatic in his campaign and continues to be that he wants veterans properly cared for and for them to receive the benefits that they have earned and deserved. He's been very, very emphatic in his campaign, taking a strong, strong stance that there would be no changes to Social Security and Medicare. I would love for him to visit the folks in Social Security that process those claims, that work for the American citizens, and show him how that all that is done, and done in such a very good, systematic way. And I applaud President Trump. Social Security is the best anti-poverty program that ever existed in this country, and we are holding him at his word. There will be no changes to Social Security or Medicare for any American citizen, and so I just think that's great that he's made that promise. But we'd love to show him how all that happens. It doesn't just happen in a vacuum. Federal employees administer those programs.
You know, is there a concern, especially for someone who's coming from kind of a business side and really looks at profit and loss, that they'll take a look at the government in that kind of same dynamic, and where government cannot be run always as a corporation, although you can have performance and accountability, there are some differences. Is there a concern about that kind of a framework kind of being put into government sometimes?
Clearly, we frequently hear many members of Congress talk about, well, the government should operate like a business. You wouldn't run a business in such a mannerism. The government is not a business. The government certainly needs to adhere to strong ethical standards and good practices, but it's not a business. I mean, if you look at veterans' health care, veterans are, some of them are some of the sickest individuals that require a lot of health care needs with traumatic brain injury, with many of them losing three or possibly even four of their extremities, a lot of rehab work. Being from the healthcare field, that's not where the private sector makes money in those type of arrangements, or in long-term mental health. Those are not profitable situations. And so, yeah, the government does those type things. And the government responds to emergencies with FEMA. We've had some tornadoes and various disasters in the last week, and the government is the one that is right there taking care of people. That's part of having government. We wouldn't have private business always doing those type things.
Right. You know, and you coming from the VA, I mean, I know you're very, very passionate. I'm also a veteran as well, so we appreciate your service at the VA. You know, in all of that, there's been this talk, and I know this is one of your campaigns, about kind of dismantling the VA or privatizing veteran health care, and you know, there's always been that kind of talk in the background of doing that kind of stuff. Where's your concerns at with the new administration? And maybe kind of the talk of privatization in other areas?
Well, clearly, and it's I want to call it what it is and use that word, privatization. We're seeing words like choice, community care. Those are code words for privatization. Mm. When we use that, well, we want to give veterans a choice as to where to get their care. Veterans want to be treated at the VA, and I use this, and I say veterans sometimes stand in line to get treated at the VA, and that does happen. I don't want that to happen. If there was greater staff at the VA, there would never be a line. Right. We would be able to see them. But at the same token, the VA sees people very quickly. The VA, I know from past experience, someone comes in with one issue and talks about another one. A doctor gets them by the hand, walks them down to another clinic, and gets them seen and takes care of them. And again, there's vacancies that exist right now at the VA nationwide, which veterans, it's causing delay in their care. And to you, thank you for your service to your country. I thank every veteran for their service to this country. You're the people that have maintained a democracy, that, yes, we get to go and we vote in elections. We get the freedom of speech, the freedom of the press. You're the defenders of all that. And so thank you so much for your service.
And I appreciate that. I appreciate it. And thank all the veterans. And you know, with that, you know, President Cox, I'm one of those persons who use the VA, and I truthfully have had a great experience with the VA. I mean, they have been, you know, right on top of care and everything else, and you know, oftentimes calling me and other things like that. A lot of times when, and of course, there are stories, and of course, there you have that 1-3% sometimes of situations that happen. But I wonder sometimes, is there that fear mongering that takes place about the VA, and you know, these 1 or 2 stories are being used to really cast the VA in a light that's not necessarily true. Do you ever kind of sense that?
Oh, sure. The VA is the largest healthcare system in this country. Are there opportunities for improvement? Yes. Are there always going to be some problems? Yes. I've been treated at lots of private hospitals in my career, and there have been problems. There's not a hospital in the Washington, D.C. area or anywhere in the country, or I'll change that word from a hospital to a healthcare system, that there isn't some type of complaint or something something that is not perfect, but still yet, veterans love the care at the VA. 80% of the veterans do not want vouchers for care. They want it at the VA. Veterans health care is extremely unique. Again, the VA is a leader in post-traumatic stress. It's a leader in rehab. It's a leader in geriatrics. And people forget about the fact that the VA is a secondary health care system and a backup health care system at the shooting in Orlando. No one ever talked about over 1,000 encounters was provided by the VA to victims and their families that were not veterans, but the VA stepped right up because obviously in that type of an incident, that's a lot of trauma. The VA was right there servicing the American public. The VA is the educator and provides the clinical resources for virtually every physician and nurse that we have in this country. And they all, you know, praise that educational experience. So we all gain from it. The pacemaker was developed at the VA. The bionic limbs and things that we see advertised on TV, and that was all done in the VA. The VA doesn't get the credit, but the VA did it.
Wow, you've taught me some things just in that brief moment that I did not know about the VA in terms of the great work. And we've seen government really be, honestly, the advancers of technology, the advancers of many of the things that we see in our lives today, GPS, like I said, the bionics and everything else, the government, internet and everything else. The government were the people who started this kind of stuff out. We got to take a quick break. We're talking to the national president of the American Federation of Government Employees, David Cox. He's really passionate about really representing federal employees and making sure their interests are taken care of. And we're talking about the new administration and how the AFGE and other organizations are going to be working, trying to represent the federal employee interests and make sure that you know, that they are seen in the right light, that they're given their due respect and everything else. We'll be right back after this break. You listen to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking to the national president of the American Federation of Government Employees, David Cox. You can find their website at afge.org, afge.org. They're one of several federal union, federal employee unions that represent federal government interests in terms of the federal worker, pay interests, hiring interests, making sure things are accountable, not dismantling the VA, TSA interests, and everything else. So they're out there really kind of working for their federal employee. We're talking about the federal the issues right now. We've had the hiring freeze executive order. We've had a number of different executive orders that have come out about immigration and everything else that really do impact the federal worker. And we're talking about these issues today. David, when we think about this kind of stuff and we kind of think about, you know, and I'm looking at your campaign and all the different issues you represent, and I was looking at the TSA and we've seen kind of the airport stuff and we've seen a lot of different things, whether it be the Border Patrol or TSA, a number of different Homeland Security agencies. What's the concern there in terms of the TSA and the campaign you guys are doing with them?
Well, certainly with TSA, there's been the off and on again movements to always try to privatize TSA. We saw very clearly that in 2001, the American public said, screening of passengers and baggage, we want that done by the federal government. Mm-hmm. We want a professional workforce. We want our safety secured by the government. And since we have TSA, they've done a fantastic job. We have not had hijackings. We have not had acts of terrorism. We see many weapons, knives, guns, all type of things that TSA agents confiscate each year from passengers. Sometimes it's totally innocent. People forget that they routinely carry a pocket knife and they're getting on an airplane. Some of it very innocent. Some of it, we don't know why that person would have that thing on them trying to get to an airplane. But the bottom line, they protect us. And in our country, I feel secure. I fly frequently. The TSA workforce is so professional and does a great job. We certainly are pushing for Title V rights, where they are treated as the same as all other federal employees. They have less rights and are some of the lowest paid federal workers in the country. Mm-hmm. And we believe that, hey, they deserve to be treated like everyone else because they do a great, great job. And there's a one privatized airport, because when they did TSA, they kept a couple airports as private contractors as sort of a test. And one of them is Kansas City Airport, which is privatized, and it has the longest wait times and the longest lines of any other airport in the country. So I think it just proves that a professional federal workforce has done a much, much better job.
Sir, I'm just curious, where does this privatization conversation come from? Is it more from people who are lobbying for contracts? Is it more from your private sector defense or government contractors, I should say, who really want to take the federal dollar and win those contracts? I mean, where do you hear this come from? Is it more from congressional leaders who represent their interests in those areas? I mean, where do you hear that coming from all the time?
Well, clearly it comes from the fact that people want government contracts to because many times they're very lucrative. Mm-hmm. They make a lot of money off of them. They pay employees less money. They offer less benefits. It's not as good a service. We have shown time and time again that federal employees are the best bang for the buck. They do a better job at a cheaper price and a more stable workforce. But obviously, there's money to be made in this contracting world. That's one reason that that world has continued to grow. There's $320 billion a year that's pumped into it. That is a whole lot of money. Mm-hmm. So, and that workforce, it's a lot of people, but it's somebody making a profit off of the top. And so obviously they lobby Congress, they give to political campaigns. So there's a political payback from time to time over those type issues. So, it's frequently shown of the connection, with various members of Congress, in the direction that they go. We believe, and I'm firmly convinced, federal employees do the best job every day, and the American people benefit from it. You know, federal employees, they're loyal to the federal government. They wanted to be civil servants. Contractors are loyal to that corporation. Many times in a contract workforce, it's one employee today, for a week another employee. There's not the ownership of a job, the feeling connected to an organization. So it's just a whole different process.
Right. You know, the Department of Defense, really recently have been talking about the layoffs of civilians according to their job performance. And I know you guys have been talking about defending the jobs, especially with the National Defense Authorization Act that laid out some new guidelines. I mean, what's going on with that right now, and what happened with that legislation, and then what's going on in terms of your fight?
With the Defense Authorization Act, many of the issues that we pushed for, we were successful. We have a moratorium on the A-76 process, which is the contracting out process. And one of the requirements is that the government has to develop and give a complete inventory of all the contracts that they have. Mm-hmm. In the Department of Defense, Army has been able to develop their listing of contracts and the service providers, but the other branches have not been able to do that. Again, we're back to, if you want to drain the swamp, how do you possibly know that you need less federal employees and more contract employees when you can't even give an accounting of the number of contracts and who they are and how much they are for? I mean, let's be real. I know my bills that I owe and how much they are each month because I've got to pay them.
Right.
So, I mean, that's part of the thing. We go back to the days of talking about government contracts in which the government paid $600 for a hammer and various things. When these contracts are just wheeled and dealed, again, the taxpayer, which is you and I, pay the price for that. That's why there needs to be a strict inventory of government contracts, make sure that these are appropriate contracts, they're providing the service, and that it is the best bang for the taxpayer and that the taxpayer is not being ripped off in it.
And with all of this, in terms of the looking at the performance of federal workers, is there a concern with these appraisal systems that they're trying to roll out, maybe changing the dynamics of the merit system and kind of the tenure of federal workers?
Well, clearly, we believe in merit system principles for federal employees. Some of the changes to make them totally at-will employees would only create a political workforce. Mm. We could go back many years in this country. President Andrew Jackson, he 10% of the federal workforce was people that worked on his campaign and helped elect him, and he gave them a government job. There's over 4,000 political appointees in the federal government that certainly can carry out the administration, whoever's the president, the desires and the agencies. But over 100 years ago, we said we wanted a workforce that was a professional workforce, that was not a spoil system, that basically that when there's a transition of power, Social Security checks keep being processed, veterans keep getting cared for, our borders are maintained, and the safety and security, that our food's inspected, our national defense is protected, because those people continue to get up and go to work and do that job. It's not a wiping out of everyone and now hiring all new people. That it's people get those jobs because of their qualifications and their skills, not because of where they were at in a political arena.
We're talking to David Cox. He's the national president of the American Federation for Government Employees. You can find their website at afge.org. We're talking about a number of different issues that really, really have some concerns and issues for federal employees, and really kind of addressing those concerns and talking about the new administration and really how to kind of deal with the transition of leadership in government, but also making sure that federal employees are given the due respect that they deserve, whether it be pay issues or whether it be their performance issues or anything else that's going on. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we have been talking about issues that relate to federal employees. We have been talking about the hiring freeze, talking about issues that deal with performance, talking about the dynamics of contractors versus federal employees, talking about a number of different issues related to the federal government and those federal employees who work for it and serve so honorably and want to continue to serve so honorably with the federal government, especially as it relates into this new time period of a new administration, an administration that is definitely kind of taking some kind of new stances and putting a hiring freeze into effect. They're having some concern and having some anxiety with some federal workers right now. People want a little bit of more clarity about where things are going so they don't have to be so concerned about their jobs and can really focus in on really doing things for the American public, the American citizen, and everything else. We're talking to the national president of the American Federation of Government Employees, David Cox, and he's a former federal worker, worked at the VA, served our veterans, is very, very passionate about the VA and all government agencies, but we're here talking about these issues. Sir, you know, when we think about this, on our first segment, you mentioned the pay. I know President Obama, before he left, was trying to increase a little bit about pay, but what's going on? I know you guys have a campaign talking about 5.3% catch-up pay. What's been the situation of pay, and then what needs to be done to get federal workers caught up?
Well, clearly, AFGE certainly worked very aggressively last year for legislation that was 5.3 catch-up pay because of the fact federal employees had 3 years of a pay freeze, 1 year that, or 2 years that they only got a 1% pay increase. The president proposed a 1.6. At the very end, we were, through aggressive work, we were able to get that moved up to a 2.1% pay increase. This year, we are seeking legislation for a 3.2% pay increase, believing that's what it would take to bring federal employees up. At this point, we are continuing to earn about 6.5% less than we did in 2010 because of what's happened with pay freezes and very small cost of living adjustments. But we feel very comfortable that the legislation will be introduced. We will be working aggressively for co-sponsors to move that legislation, and that's a reasonable pay raise for federal employees. The economy is booming. The headlines of every newspaper today is the Dow Jones hit over 20,000 for the first time in the history of this country. Mm-hmm. So things are going well with the economy. It's time now to properly pay federal employees. We gave up $182 billion in wages and benefit takeaways since 2010. So that is a whole lot of money that one section of employees in this country was asked to give up for debt reduction. So it's time to give us an adequate raise. And people talk about federal employees make a lot of money. The average AFGE member take-home pay is around $500 a week, and over 600,000 federal employees earn less than $50,000 a year. So I don't think you're getting real wealthy working for the federal government.
Do you think the misconceptions are coming from either politicians or other things like that? I mean, where is that misconception coming from, that federal workers are, or are people looking on USA Jobs and seeing the GS 14, 15 positions and thinking that all federal workers are making that kind of money? I mean, where do you see these misconceptions coming from?
Well, and I think that may be a misconception that, there are higher graded paid employees, and we're not opposed to the pay that those people make. They assume a great deal of responsibility. I know more about the VA than I do other agencies. Mm-hmm. A medical center director in the VA would maybe make $175,000 a year. Well, that's a lot of money to a lot of people in this country. But if I would go to any private sector hospital, if I'd go here in D.C. to the Washington Hospital Center, Georgetown Medical Center, many of the other healthcare systems, I would be very surprised if the director of those healthcare facilities was not making a lot more than $175,000 a year.
Right.
I would suspect they're making four or five times that amount. So, again, while those seem like high salaries, they are not. Even physicians in the VA are paid less than what they would make in the private sector. And sometimes when people talk about the average of a federal employee pay, because the government's a broad employer, you have physicians in the VA, we have rocket scientists that work for the federal government. That can sometimes skew it, but the average pay of our members is around $50,000 a year. Not a lot of money.
Right. You know, when we look at it and kind of going through the number of different issues, and I wanted to kind of talk about this, you know, as we began going through, I know there's been a change in terms of the retirement issues. There's been a kind of the dynamic of the paid parental leave. Are the benefits really kind of being kind of stripped away from the federal employee more and more? Is that a bigger concern, that all these benefits? I mean, the federal employee used to have some of the best retirement situations in all the nation. Is that changing right now?
That started changing in the 80s as we moved from a civil service retirement to what we call the FERS system, which is a very, very small defined benefit portion and a defined contribution, the 401k plan. And now Congress over the last several years with twice they said all new hires would have to pay a higher contribution for the same retirement benefit. Mm-hmm. There are those in Congress that want to totally eliminate the defined benefit portion of the federal employee retirement and say that they would only have the 401k. But again, to recruit the best and the brightest, I think we're going to have to offer benefits that attracts people. But people want to be civil servants, but people also, they have to live. They want to buy a home. They want to raise their family. They want to educate their children and save for retirement. And they're going to have to make an adequate wage and to have appropriate and proper benefits. So we will be working aggressively against any move that would change retirement contributions or eliminate the defined benefit portion or to change the health care plan. There's many that would like to change it and make it to a voucher system. And there is some correlation between the Affordable Care Act and federal employee health benefit plan, that actually a lot of how the Affordable Care Act was designed was it corresponds to federal employee health benefit plan. There's many insurance that's available, health insurance, and federal employees can choose each year from those plans. They're run by private companies. The government pays a part. The employee pays a part, but there's about 9 million people with federal employees and those who are retired from the federal government that, and when I'm that number, you may say, well, you said there's only 2 million federal workers, but there's their family members that's covered under family plan insurance. So it's a lot of people. There's 18 million in the Affordable Care Act plan, so there's about 50% as many there. Congress starts making changes to all these health care issues, it will have an impact upon federal employees and all the American citizens. And I'm a firm believer that health care is a right in a country this great, not a privilege, but a right.
That's right. So we've got about 30 seconds. What would you say to federal employees just as kind of closing out?
Number one, I would say to all federal employees, no matter what union represents you, if you're not a member of that union, you need to join that union, but not just be a member. You need to get actively involved and be an active participant. You need to voice on a regular basis by calling your member of Congress, not on a government phone, not on government time, but you have that right to voice your concerns to members of Congress about your pay and benefits and the funding for your agency.
Thank you for your time, sir. I want to kind of keep this conversation going because I know you're monitoring a number of different issues, so we're going to definitely have to have you back. We appreciate you representing federal employees and really kind of bringing their issues to the table, and we thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you so much, and thank you for your service to this country, and it was great being with you this morning.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.